All right, let's talk about this guy who would go to his sales meetings anticipating a good donut and was so disappointed with the quality of the donuts. He said, you know what? I'm going to do my own donut company. We have the legendary Neil Bukowski, owner of Neil's Donuts, on the phone. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Good. I love your story.
Yeah, thanks. It's different. You know, you have to make changes in life sometimes because you're not happy at places, and this is what we did.
All right, so you were, what, like a sales guy or something?
Yeah, we were inside sales. I didn't like the job. Not really a salesperson to start with, you know, and I was like in my late 30s at the time when I left. So I did this my whole life, and it was time for a change, and, you know, corporation took over there and made it easy to change. Well, you guys are in radio. You know about corporations taking over.
Well, this radio station's been very lucky to have fallen into hands of good owners, but I know what you mean because not too far down the street, they're not so lucky. So you're at that, you're coming up on 40, you're like tired of this job, you walk into the meeting and these donuts suck, and you're like,
yeah,
there's an opening here.
We're in this meeting, and there was a limit on how much money you could spend, and so I would always go over the limit. Because I wanted something better. I didn't like, you know, the standard, I don't know what you call them, cookie cutter donuts.
Got it.
That are around all over America. So anyway, I used to bring in stuff. Corporate America took over and said, you're spending too much money. We're not going to give you that money back. I said, that's all right. I don't want it back. They said, no, you got to follow the rules. Got to follow the rules. So I brought in the usual stuff. And I'm sitting there in the meeting. And there's a glazed donut that I'm eating. And it's like they took the edge of the donut and rolled it in the glaze so the top and the bottom didn't have any glaze on it. So in the middle of the meeting, I'm eating this thing. I'm like, what is this thing?
I love this guy.
Sounds like he has a problem.
There was like, I don't know how many, 20, 25 people in the meeting. And they're looking at me. I said, this is complete. I can't eat like this. I said, so, you know, they're like, it's not. You know, this meeting isn't about donuts. I said, it is for me. I said, this is the only thing good about the meetings.
I love this.
The only thing good about this meeting is you guys, you know, you're nitpicking stuff and you got to make this many phone calls and you have to have this much talk time. And I'm like, I can't do all that while I'm at this meeting while you're wasting my time. And the only thing I enjoy is the food. And I can't even eat that. I thought for sure I was getting fired. But anyway, I got back when the meeting was done and my friends come to me and they're like, are you all right? I said, screw this. I said, I'm opening up my own donut shop.
That was it. That like, meeting.
That was it.
Wow.
I mean, over the last, I'd say 10 years before that, I used to talk, my mother would cook and family and stuff would come over and I'd say, you can't really get good donuts. You can't get good bakery stuff. You know, they're all going out of business. The big chains are taking over. The supermarkets are doing stuff and they're running everybody out of business and it's frustrating me. So you add that to what happened at the meeting and I'm like, I got to do something about this. So I was actually, while I was still working there, I didn't get fired somehow.
We're talking to Neil of Neil's Donuts, by the way. This is the story of how he'd come to just leave his business and start a donut shop.
I love it. Starts with a crash out. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, everything kind of fell into place, too. My kids were out of daycare, so I could live off my wife and be on her benefits if she was a teacher. And so everything fell right into place. It's like I could still keep this job, go work in a bakery part-time in the morning and learn how to do things. And I was buying books, like college books, to study this stuff and just, you know, get the feel for it. But to make things even crazier, so I kept that job, worked in the bakery. The bakery offered me a full-time job for like half the pay that I was making.
But so you were getting up in the middle of the night, going into the bakery, working in a bakery, then going to your regular 9-to-5?
Yeah, it was, I had to be in at 4. That's the Irish Bakery down in Milford. The first day he greeted me with a beer at 4 in the morning.
What a welcome!
It was a fun place to work, I got to admit. And they taught me a lot, and I'm very appreciative. They're not around anymore, but... So So, yeah, I was doing that. Then I'd go to my job. I think it started at 8:30, and I would work 8:30 to 5.
Covered
in
flour.
And I did that for about a year and a half. I did that for a year and a half, and then they offered me full-time bakery. I took it, and everything fell into place with the money and everything. And so I did tell her, I said, eventually I want to open up my own bakery, donut shop, whatever. And she had no problem. I said, I just won't do it near you because I don't like doing things like that.
Right.
So I just happened to be driving down the road from where I live in Wallingford at the time. And there was this bagel shop that went out of business and it said for rent. And I'm like, that's the place. I looked around. It's a little small, but I said, that's the place. I said, you know, I'm going to try it out and see what happens. I put everything in order. And
did you have enough money to...
Yeah, I used my 401k.
Man, that's you pushed all your chips out on the table.
Yeah, you really went for it.
Well, what'd your wife think of this?
The strangest. she was fine.
Wow.
She knew I was miserable in my job, you know, the sales.
She was like, this will keep him out of the house. Good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, stop bitching about donuts.
Yeah, you're right. I do get on her nerves, but yeah, I just, you know. I don't know. It all worked out, but, you know, even a stranger story with the donuts, my first day here. Now, I'm by myself. I have to come in at 3 in the morning. There's nobody else to work other than somebody in the front at the time. And I didn't know what to expect. But anyway, I'm known for putting a lot of filling in my donuts, like we cut them in half. So everybody thinks I'm a genius because of that. Well, what happened is, I'll tell the truth, there's two... And this was a manual one. You put the jelly inside the little pot thing, and you pump the handle, and so you stick the donut in there, and the jelly comes in. Well, on the first pump, it broke. And I'm standing there like, now what do I do? So I'm like, I got to cut these donuts and put the filling in. It's the only way to do it.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
And so ever since then, everybody would walk in. It's like, what a brilliant idea. Look at all the filling you could get in here. And I'm like, yeah, I am pretty smart.
Totally not an accident.
Well, the greatest thing about that is, you know, a lot of people would say, well, we got to get that thing fixed because we're putting too much filling in and that costs a lot of money and, you know, the profit and blah, blah, blah. And this is this when you're coming from a place where I'm going to do something really great, you don't look at the money end of it. You just do it. And then the people come. And that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly correct. That's what has to happen. A lot of people don't understand that.
No, what happens in art and other things is people try to make something that a lot of people will buy so they can make a lot of money. And in doing that, you're making something very generic.
You sacrifice here, and then it doesn't stand out.
You're not coming from a place of passion. You're coming from a place of greed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Neil from Neil's Donuts on. How long have you been open now?
It'll be 25 years next summer.
Wow. Oh my God. Does it feel like 25 years?
No, not really. I can't believe that much time went by. Scary.
What's great about it is it hasn't become normal. Like when people walk in with a box from Neil's Donuts, there's still that... Wow.
Look at this.
This is great. It's like everything that you wanted in that meeting over two decades ago is happening still today when that box comes in.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. It's crazy. And I hear these stories and it really is strange. I mean, the whole weird thing is I'm kind of a conservative guy. I don't take chances. I really don't take chances on anything. And the fact that I actually did all this and it worked, it's really strange, and now that I could think about it, since I kind of like
looking back, you're like, who was that guy who left his job and took his 401k money and put it out on the you know, you're like, wow, that was I'd never do that now.
That's not me. In fact, you know, we expanded 5 years ago. My son wanted to open a shop, and we're in Middletown too. I didn't, you know, I'm the guy. It's like I don't know. But he's up there and he takes care of that. They have their own set of bakers. We follow the same rules and hopefully everything comes out the same or almost the same. And it's risky, though. That's the hard part of expanding. People say you ought to franchise and do this, this, this. I'm like, then you become a different company. Yeah,
that's what happens.
Less filling when you franchise.
All of a sudden. Yep.
Yeah.
We're not cutting those donuts in half anymore.
It's nice
you can't
that you
keep an eye on things.
Right. Well, it's nice that your boy has, you know, I'm sure he came up through your program of making donuts, and he has you to lean on.
Yes. Yeah. And he pretty much caught on right away. I have my daughter in Wallingford, and she's managing the front, and eventually, you know, these guys will have to take over.
Well, the other thing
with
is
my name on the sign, it's tough to walk away.
Yeah. You know, there was Phil who made Phil's Donuts in Woodbury.
Same thing. I don't know him, but
Same thing. I don't know what his beginning story was, but he was very, very attached to the quality of the donuts.
Yeah. Your name's on there, so you worry about it. I worry about it all the time. And I can't. I mean, I do my share of eating, but I can't test everything here.
The other thing about your place is people say you'll see a line, but that line is moving.
You can just look at the parking lot. Just see how often the cars are going in and out. It's very fast.
Yeah, that's me. I'm nuts. you know, my whole life growing up, we had bakeries in town, the old New York Bakery in Wallingford, which was very well known. But I would have to, I get out of church or whatever at the time or whatever it is on a Sunday, and you'd stand there and be six or seven people in line. I'm like, he's like here for 20 minutes. And it was a great bakery, but that's just the way things were. And they had the string hanging down from the ceiling. The old ladies would tie the box. You know, it was nice and everything, but right. It's like, I got kids at home. I want to get out of here. I want to get my food. I'm impatient.
Yeah, move it.
And I'm like that wherever I go. It's like, I just want to get my stuff and get out. And so I kind of took that with me at this shop, and you know, I that's the way I am, and it works. Because
what do you do with the person who's like, I'm going to take a dozen donuts. Let me have one, I don't know, jelly, maybe a crumb. What do you do with those people?
I tell them 5 seconds, get out.
Good.
We let them. It's tough in Wallingford, especially because it's smaller. Middletown has more space. It is tough in Wallingford because they do tell me some people say they're intimidated because there's a line behind them. And I have, like, in the morning on Saturday and Sunday, after 8 o'clock in the morning, I have 10 counter people in this tiny little place working.
Oh, man.
And they're all shouting, can I help you? Can I help? And there's no room for them. And then I go out there and clog up the area, too, because I'm like, oh, we got to get these sandwiches out. And so it's tough out there. And then when somebody comes in and wants to, like, take a look around and take their time, it's really hard. I mean, we don't care. You know, do what you have to do. If you need that time, take it. But they don't feel comfortable, and I don't have a way to correct that, unfortunately.
Well, I don't think you need much correction over there in Wallingford. It sounds like you have the plan for success. Well, thanks for coming on. I could do another 20 minutes with you, but I got to keep it moving here. So I want to talk to you again about how you make these donuts. Because there's a thing with humidity and cold temperature, and you got to know all this stuff.
And it's proofing.
There's a whole science.
So there's a whole lot to it.
Neil of the infamous Neil's Donuts in Wallingford. What a great story. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot.
And congratulations.
Oh, boy. It's time for Dumbass News.
99.1 PLR.
It's time for Chaz and AJ Dumbass News.
Jimmy Cash and Steve.
Dumbass.
Kids, it's Jimmy Cash.
You just call me a dumbass?
Dumbass.
Yeah, that's not nice. Kids at your school?
He said Jimmy Cash, and I heard dumbass. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's I'm used to that.
Nice. Yeah. Jimmy Cash playing Foxwoods on November 1st. We're linked up at WPLR.com. All right, does this story need a setup? Not really. It's an ER doctor on TikTok.
Yeah.
Okay? And
yeah.
They're all the doctors are on TikTok now. And he's an emergency room doctor, and he talks about some of the things he had to pull out. Like, what's the weirdest thing he had to pull out of someone's butt?
I don't know what it is, but whenever I tell people I'm an emergency room doctor, they always ask me two things. What is the sickest thing you've ever seen? And what's the weirdest thing you've ever pulled out of someone's butt? I see a lot of it. I'd say one of the most memorable ones was a guy came in whose complaint was personal problems, which I always know is going to be usually butt stuff. I go in to see him.
Butt stuff.
He's like, yeah, I already know.
You don't want to tell the person typing up, you know, your personal info, your name, your address. Yeah, there's something I used to have that I can't get now, but it's with me right now, and I'd like it back.
I'll just say abdominal pressure. Mm.
That's a good one.
And he says that he and his girlfriend got a little crazy last night, or maybe 2 days ago, put something up there, and he can't get it out. I said, you know what? No judgment. I get it. This was a Yankee Candle. And I'm not talking about just a little baby one. I'm talking about the desktop jar. And not just the top.
Dude, what?
The desktop jar, the giant?
Hold on. Why does he? What does he mean? No judgment. I get it. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
wait till you see what I have up mine.
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me get my stuff. Yeah. Let me get my tools.
And not just the top, but the whole damn thing. So
I like how the little Jaws reference there. The whole damn thing.
The entire base and everything in there.
How's that possible? That's not possible. That's not possible. How is that possible?
I don't want to think about it too much. I'm going to be honest.
If that's true, you can't hold anything in there. That's not a storage compartment anymore.
You got to just walk around with a diaper all the time.
You got to have a diaper.
At least it smelled good.
That's I do want to know.
What scent was in there?
All right, we didn't get to the end yet, so maybe he shares.
So I stopped asking questions like, how'd you get it up there? Or what were you thinking? Because that's not important. The question now becomes, how do you...
No, it is. Sorry, that is important.
For me, as an audience member to this story, it's important.
How did it get up there?
I would like to know.
Where did it start? What was first?
Right.
And then over how many years and what were graduating points?
Right.
Like,
okay, now we're going to what? A Coke bottle.
Right. But even just that evening, I feel like you don't like come home from work and it's like right to the candle. I feel like there's a gradual step process. Mm.
Yeah, there's this whole stretching thing involved.
Right.
Yeah, it's like we're about to run a marathon. Wow. You
got to train.
Yeah, you got to limber up.
You start with a mile, then you work up. Chaz and AJ.
Maybe he was testing the scent of the candle. Maybe it worked for them. Trying to get a new scent.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks.
You never know. Okay.
And really, for things that are really big, you can't just reach up there and grab them and pull them out because the suction causes a vacuum to pull it back in. So really, the treatment is to paralyze them in the operating room with anesthesia, like you would for an operation, although you don't operate on them. But it requires critical care, anesthesia, intubation, putting them on a ventilator. You give them medication that relaxes every muscle in their body so you can go up and grab it. You know, and in ER, we always like to guess things like hemoglobin levels and alcohol levels and things like that. This time, I won the bet. Pumpkin spice.
Oh.
It was October. It was easy.
Oh. You know, I'm never going to say, man, I'm tired of this pumpkin spice. I've got pumpkin spice coming out my... So we're going to talk to the author of Haunted Waterbury in the Lower Nugatuck Valley. And I thought, man, we're going to hear some scary stuff. And it was even worse than I could imagine. During the commercial break, we started talking about the Yankees.
Oh, no.
The Yankees.
Ugh.
Oh,
what the hell happened?
Very scary. Last night, especially the ninth inning, bases loaded, no outs. Come
all
on,
right, all, you right, just, all right.
You picture that Yankee magic. You just picture the home run, and you know. But I'm flashing back to Derek Jeter days. You know,
they even had the right guy at the plate, man. Bases loaded, nobody out, and it's Stanton facing Chapman. You're like, this could not be a better situation for the Yankees.
I thought Stanton was going to, especially the postseason. Yeah. Stanton, but
he's a legendary figure. He's like a mythic figure. It's like Paul Bunyan.
Strike three.
Michael Bogava is in, author of Haunted Waterbury. And Jimmy Cash is in studio, comedian. He's at Foxwoods November 1st.
Yes, sir.
He's a Boston fan, so I just hate this segment already.
All right.
We don't have to talk about baseball. And you're a suffering Met fan, right?
Yes, at least the Yankees are here in October. I mean, we got to the very end. All we had to do was win one game against the lowly Marlins.
And you traveled to see them?
Yeah, I went up to Cincinnati a few weeks ago to catch that weekend series. I knew it was so important, and no, No go. One out of three. And the writing was on the wall. All the Met fans at a Great American Ballpark.
That's spooky.
We're sad already. And it was just the beginning of September.
You right. felt it coming already.
Yeah.
Coming right there, yeah.
Yeah.
You knew.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like walking into a haunted house. You're like, something bad is about to happen.
There's a vibe. Yeah.
There's a bad vibe.
There's
a bad vibe. All right, so Haunted Waterbury in the Naugatuck Valley. Where do you begin?
I mean, there's so many stories that are going up and down the entire valley. Every town on the banks of the river has a story to tell, haunted heritage. In the Derby area, and what I'm we'll be discussing at the Twisted Vine on October 9th, the evening of October 9th, are the haunted stories, not just about Derby, but the restaurant itself is haunted.
What happened there?
It goes a long way back to psychics having a sensation that there was a fire on site before the bank was even built. And it was arson, and children died in that fire.
Ew.
And now there are ghosts of children. And that's been
documented. This is some psychic saying it?
Yes, yes. But the sensations of the folks who are visiting the restaurant, both as patrons, diners, and people coming in who are clairvoyant, are getting that same sensation about children.
Really?
That's the first and one of the more common themes.
Another, seems like that would be easy to look up, no? But, I guess not it, way back then.
It compounds itself, and not just that feeling of children, because is it from the fire? There are the local heritage about the flood that took place in August 19th, 1955.
The 55 flood.
Exactly. It was terrible. It just destroyed the entire Naugatuck Valley. But when those flood tides roared down, every town cemeteries were gouged open, and crypts and coffins and the interred bodies were sent downriver. Huh. When they were gathered, they needed a temporary morgue.
Man, and I thought it was bad cleaning out that refrigerator from that flip house I just got. That would be a tough job. Like, all right, go find a coffin and the body that was in it, and then do it again and again and again.
And then we got to figure out which town it belongs to, which
that's
cemetery
right.
it belongs
There's
to.
There's no DNA testing.
Oh,
no,
my God.
Exactly. And so they needed a temporary housing area. They needed a temporary mortuary. And that was the Birmingham National Bank.
No! Oh, that's the problem.
There you go. So it may be the children from the fire.
Oh, this is poltergeist.
Or
it's exactly what I'm picturing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Holy crap. So what kind of things happen at the Twisted Vine that freak people out?
Well, besides seeing shadow figures, shadow people, there seems to be an obsession with toys. If you leave toys in the lower level in the arched rooms, come back in a little bit, those toys have been moved when no one else has entered that area. Nobody else human has entered that area. The entire building has experienced paranormal activity. Again, shadow figures, poltergeist activity, a lot of glassware and silverware being tossed, moved around. One of the workers back when it was the old Birmingham restaurant.
That was the name of Derby. It was like the valley was
exactly.
Birmingham.
Yeah, Birmingham encompassed all the valley towns, or the bigger towns, and the bank was named after the site. The poltergeist activity that was taking place, the workers were always complaining of objects flying across the room, hearing strange noises, hearing footsteps, or things being dragged across the floor.
Oh, that's horrifying.
That was a story from David Harmon, who currently works there, and a great guy. Michael Picone is the owner.
That's a good spot to do your talk a week from tomorrow with the book. Haunted Waterbury and the Lower Naugatuck Valley.
And we're just going to be focusing, not just the restaurant, but the restaurant will be a majority of this conversation, but they're going to be the other stories there. Is the legend of a wraith. And a wraith is a vengeful ghost, almost like a vampire coming out and just obsessing on the living to torment them. A young lady was buried.
Let me know how that works out for you. I'll be over here. All right. Author Michael Balava wrote the book Haunted Waterbury and the Naugatuck Valley in studio. We are celebrating the arrival of October.
Happy October, everyone.
A week from tomorrow, he's doing a book signing and a chit-chat over at the Twisted Vine, known to be haunted. Jimmy Cash in studio. He's from Massachusetts. And you, what did you say? Your daughter's named what?
Annabelle Lee. Yeah. After the Edgar Allan Poe poem. But not, yeah, we named her that, and then we found out it was a dark, sad poem.
Pure goth. Pure yeah. goth. The definition of goth.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Right.
Yeah. It is cool.
And there's a horror movie, Annabelle, after she was born that came out. So it just keeps getting worse, but.
Yeah.
Or better.
Or better. Yeah. It's yeah, cool. Right. It's cool.
Kids won't push her around.
Right. That's it's right. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. They're scared of her.
Leave her alone or Annabelle right. will follow you.
Bill in Westbrook.
Hi, I've got two. It's not Naugatuck, but I talked to Phil. Anyways, New London Ledge Lighthouse. Ernie is supposedly the ghost, and Ernie apparently jumped off the roof
oh, man.
Of the lighthouse and now haunts the lighthouse because he jumped off because his wife had an affair. Have you heard anything about that one? I got another one for you, too.
Yeah, the New London Lighthouse off the coast of New London, totally haunted. Ernie is the likely suspect, but folks don't really know. Ernie's name continually comes up in conversations about who or what is haunting that site.
But your wife cheats on you, that's not the revenge. No, you lose weight, you get some nice clothes, you get yeah. your hair cut.
Turn the light on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Go ahead. Sorry.
What was the second story, Bill?
The other one is Norwich Hospital.
Oh, it's a great site. The beach there is the best beach in Connecticut. It's a private beach. It's a state park, but it affronts that private site that was the former tuberculosis building. Yeah, it has a long history. Just to look at it is creepy. That Victorian mansion, abandoned, of course, on the beach with the waves. It's a great site. All of those state institutions that were used to keep folks under wraps, they have tragic and terrible histories. So, of course, they're going to attract some kind of negative vibration, some kind of ghostly activity of the folks who still remain on site.
Wait, the best beach in Connecticut is an old tuberculosis hospital.
Crazy as it sounds.
That sounds right.
Yeah, folks who've been there, call in, please, and let me know, because that beach is just beautiful.
Wow.
Hey, Bill, thanks for calling, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, you got it.
All right. All right. Satan in Derby.
Hey, how you doing?
You have a question for Michael?
Yeah. Hey, Michael, I like your stuff.
Thank you.
I'll see you a week from tomorrow, by the way. I got tickets, so I'll be there. Question about the book. Am I in there?
Yes. Yes. Okay. You were acknowledged like throughout the book.
Where?
Definitely, I would say, in the Ansonia chapter, whatever brought a wraith back to life, a vengeful ghost in Ansonia, is also... the Baldwin Street Demon House.
That's, oh, man.
That was
so nothing about me in Waterbury.
Definitely in Waterbury.
Okay.
The Baldwin Street Demon
House. How many chapters do I make?
You make the opening chapter.
Okay, very good. I like it. I'll see you Thursday.
Thank you.
What phone service do you think he has? Do you think he uses AT&T or... Verizon.
Much better than most of our callers.
666.
That was very clear.
Used the mouthpiece and everything.
He knew how to, you know. Can people be more like the devil, please? He knows how to call. He got right to the point. Sean and Granby.
Morning, guys. Not as interesting as your last caller, Satan, but I did want to talk about Dudleytown. I was lucky enough to get in there about 20 years ago. There's absolutely no noise in there. You don't hear any animals. It was an August
night.
That
is creepy.
Yeah, and what got us the best was it was about 2 in the morning, and we were talking to each other because we had lost where we parked my truck, and we could see each other's breath. And I swear on my kid's soul that a tree actually tried to grab me, and then we ran, and luckily we found my truck, I want to say, about 5 in the morning.
Oh, man. That's like one of those apple trees from The Wizard of Oz.
Exactly.
How would you like it if someone tried to pick apples off of you? Huh?
Yeah, that abandoned village in the northwest corner of Connecticut has a long history of strange activity. Criminal activity. Was that the source of the supernatural events? Or did the paranormal entities cause people to murder their families and commit suicide. It was
didn't they say it was something in the water? They thought it was something in the water. It was like some... I don't know, whatever.
I know that it was an enclave of retired professors for a while, and folks would come up from New York City, from Columbia, that there were a string of murders, suicides, cows being struck by lightning in broad daylight.
That has to smell pretty good, though.
No storms brewing, just lightning strikes that were killing livestock and folks. There was a reverend in the 1800s, his last name was Starr. Reverend Starr spent all of his time, all of his waking hours, building a stone wall. Now, most folks will build a stone wall or any kind of wall or fence to keep something out. It's my theory that Reverend Starr of this area was building a wall to keep something in.
What was that M. Night Shyamalan movie where, like, the village? Yeah.
I feel like that was
built on based on Dudleytown. You know,
like, I can
this
see
is
that.
Why they're scaring people away from Dudleytown, because there's this whole, you know, life going on in there, and they're keeping people away. Oh,
yeah. Tight-knit community, keeping secrets.
Yeah,
yeah, right. You can't even get in there now.
No. The police are extremely strict. They do not.
Yeah, we've been trying for 10 years to get back in, and we failed miserably.
No trespassing.
I can't believe the experience you have. Your first thought is, we should go back there.
Yeah.
You go back to Disney World. You don't go back to Dudleytown.
Yeah, the tree almost grabbed me. Let me go back there.
I want to see if that tree still remembers me.
Hey, Sean, thank you, man. Michael, thanks for coming in. We're linked up at WPLR.com to the book signing a week from tomorrow at the Twisted Vine. It sounds like great fun. This is great October fun in Connecticut, by the way. We'll have you on many times.
I'm looking forward to it. Of course.
Awesome. Michael Balava, everybody. You. Ken Pierce, News 8 in studio. Who vomited in his bed? And we just happen to have a janitor here. This is a school janitor, Jimmy Cash.
Yes.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm good at investigating these type of things.
Jimmy Cash playing Foxwoods November 1st. Ken Pierce, you can see him every day, Monday through Friday on News 8.
If you get up early enough, yeah.
Yeah. So what happened with the vomit?
Okay, so I mentioned I was on vacation the past week
or
so.
Jimmy, ask away.
Yep. We don't need Scooby-Doo to get to the bottom of this mystery. So we were looking after my wife's sister's dog for a few days. Sister was in New York, a bunch of meetings with the UN. She's a public health...
Holy cow.
Muck, you know,
she went in for that big deal at the UN?
Yep. Yeah, she's...
Wow.
She's got a PhD in public health. She goes all over the world trying to...
Is that good money or is that more prestige?
It's a little of both. I mean, it's working with a lot of nonprofits, so there's not a lot of money. And with the cuts to foreign aid from the U.S., it's even less money.
Challenging.
Much less money now. Not the point. We were taking care of her dog. Cute little Westie. I love Westies. I grew up with a West Highland White Terrier. But the dog is used to sleeping in her bed. And so she wasn't there. We're taking care of the dog. Where does the dog want to sleep? In our bed with me and my
wife. Right. How do you feel about that?
I wasn't crazy about it.
I'm not a
going into
dog
it,
in
I
the
wasn't
bed.
Crazy
I used to be.
It.
Now I'm not.
And I mean, it's a small dog.
But I
dog.
Have the cats in my bed. So, like, what's the difference?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
To me, I think that's worse, but I don't know.
Yeah, because they step in the litter box.
Yeah, and
they clean it. They're very clean, though.
I'm more of a dog guy than a cat guy. In my experience, cats can just be like mean. I mean, they were like just in the middle of the night.
Well, what are you doing to them?
Nothing. They just.
I don't know. That didn't sound convincing.
I'm more of a dog guy. So I love
think they,
this dog.
They know when they see you. Like, he doesn't like us.
I did end up chasing my mother-in-law's cat around the house once, but it was eating my food.
They all talk.
It was eating my food.
What?
Well, it was Christmas dinner.
Great follow-up question, Jimmy.
This is when he was just starting as a reporter, not making a lot of money.
Times were tough.
Eating cat food.
Like those 10-cent cans are attractive.
It was Christmas dinner. We were in college. We were taking some leftover food home. It was like in plastic bags. We were going to take it home. And the cat got into it. And so I'm like, I walk into the kitchen. I see the cat like eating my food. You know, I'm 20 years old or whatever.
That's
like, get out of there. And start chasing the cat around.
That's it. All those cats now. You know, you were on CNN, the Cat News Network.
That's him, the cat chaser.
That's right.
So I was not all that pleased with the idea of the dog being in the bed in the first
place. I hear you.
Turn out the lights, close my eyes.
That's the dog licking himself. What's going on?
Oh. Just the dog starts making these sounds.
You know how to make a cat sound?
A little bit, yes, actually. And should we flip on the lights? Sure enough, the dog is throwing up in the bed, like right in between our pillows.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Not
like what kind
not
of
what you want to.
Like, was it solid?
It was on the more solid side. There's people eating breakfast right now listening to this, I'm sure.
I know.
What was the viscosity like?
On a scale of what? Like 1 to 10?
1 to 10, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
would it sink or float in water? What do you think?
So Jimmy's a comedian, but you know his day job is a janitor at a school.
Okay.
And so, you know, when a kid vomits,
yeah,
he gets the call.
Yep.
And you know he's seen it all.
You know what saves the day? It's kitty litter. Throw that right on the vomit.
Is that what you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Makes
sense. Dries it right up, sucks it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We didn't have any of that.
No, of course not.
Because you hate cats.
I hate cats. If you like cats, you would have been.
Yeah. What, you know, yeah. If you're a cat fan, you would have been able to solve this problem.
You could have helped yourself out.
Got the dog out of the bed first.
Yeah.
Of course, it didn't throw up anymore after that.
Good.
Stripped the sheets off the bed. Only other king-size sheets in the house were on the bed that the sister-in-law had been sleeping in the night before. So just grabbed the sheets off of her bed. Put them on our
Did
bed.
They smell like her?
I think so.
Too tired at that point.
Yeah. No, but you know, as soon as that happens, because you're ready to just go to sleep. And as soon as that happens, you know, well, now everything has changed.
Yep. There's a whole deal now.
There's a whole deal.
And, of course, I wasn't about to let that dog back in the bed.
Uh-oh.
Oh, now is there a debate about that?
Not between me and the wife.
Okay.
But
oh, but the dog.
Mm-hmm. Because now we get first the whining and then the crying.
Would you close the door?
No.
You're just saying, get off.
Yeah, well, the dog is too small to get up on the bed by itself.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh, man.
And so now the dog's... I mean... She thought that he'd be like scratching at the door to get in, so we let this just on the floor. But
just whining all night.
Then it escalated to barking.
Oh,
and what can you do at that point?
I feel like this is gonna Kent's gonna be the next Keith Urban after this situation.
This is how it all started.
No, because the sister-in-law came back and took the dog back, and now everything's fine.
Okay.
So yeah.
Oh,
we're
man.
Good now.
What was that a weeknight? Did you have to be up to do news?
No, this was on vacation last week at the beach house.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you're just trying to relax, and now this is the night you're having.
Because it'd be funny if it was during the week. Because what time do you wake up during the week?
2:45.
Ugh.
Oh.
I think my hours are better than I talk to Kent. But that would have been funny. All right, let's go to Kent Pierce live in New Haven.
Cat, cat, you're up, cat.
Huh? I know how to get him up. It's true, though. That's it. Once you hear an animal, a pet, like about to vomit, you're instant. I'm up. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Wide awake.
Yeah. Yep.
That should be like an alarm clock ringtone or something like that. Yeah, you're right. That'll get you right awake.
Right. That should be a ringtone.
That is devious.
The sound of vomit.
Oh, my God.
Cat hater and news person Kent Pierce in studio.
Could we at least flip the order?
Yeah. That's right. You know, you're going to get that. People are going to come up to you when you're doing live shots like, why do you hate cats?
Don't hate them.
He
just
doesn't hate
a dog person.
He just chased one away that was eating his food, which is what else are you going to do when
exactly.
you're in college?
That's just instinct. That's animal instinct right there.
All right, we're all going to compare weird jobs, all right? So if you had a weird job, call in 203-882-9757. Your first job was your weirdest?
Yeah, my first paying job, even before I got a job in radio, I was the church organist for Sunday services at, not a regular church, but at the Mid-Hudson Psychiatric Hospital.
Ooh.
So this was back in the days in the 80s when states ran these giant hospitals.
Right.
For anybody with any kind of mental illness.
We had Fairfield Hills.
Yep. Yeah, there were a couple of them in Connecticut.
Couple of them.
But I grew up in the Hudson Valley of New York, and this one was in Poughkeepsie. A huge facility. And yeah, every Sunday morning, I got paid by the state of New York to go in there and play three hymns in two different services.
What was that like?
a little weird.
Would you have some some days where people wanted to kind of come up and join you or sing along? Or
you know, we had our regulars. There were people who would show up every Sunday, enjoy themselves, sing right along, be active participants. And then being a mental hospital, you get some Sundays where there are people who were not having a good day.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to make a phone call and they get taken away somewhere. And
wow.
And you're watching this at 16 going, this is weird.
Okay. Good. It could be worse. I could be getting taken out of here right now.
Yeah. But at 16.
Was that back when they did like the straitjacket?
I never saw anybody in a straitjacket.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Like on television and in movies, but I've never really seen a person exactly. in a straitjacket.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably a different wing. They probably didn't let the 16-year-old like that, near that
yeah, right,
area
right.
of
They didn't
the
make it into church.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Maybe, and they might have benefited perhaps from some of that serenity. But no, I never saw quite that. But it was good money. Hey,
what was it?
It was $30 a service, so I got $60 in 1989.
That's great money.
Wow.
Every Sunday for 2 hours work.
That's great money.
Yeah. All you do is learn three tunes on the organ.
Did you ever
week.
Feel like you were in danger?
I never did.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I was 16 and you don't think about that. You're 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially you're driving to this place that's, 3 miles from my house. But no, I never really did.
It's a weird job, though.
This place is great. There's no cats or anything here.
Was there an ad in the paper? How did you get the job?
It was the person who was 2 years ahead of me in high school, who was in the music department with me, had the job, and she knew I could, muddle through some stuff on the keyboard. And so she said, hey, you want to do this? And
it's
I said,
funny.
Sure.
And then you took it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
And I handed it off to somebody in the band also.
Hey, you didn't really need to know the song either, did you? Like, no one was going to be like, you missed the
king! Professional pride here.
Right. But no one's got like you're in an audience that they're just happy to not be in their room.
That's exactly right. You've never met a more appreciative church going crowd than you meet at a psychiatric hospital because yes, they're happy to be doing
anything
something
different.
Yeah, something out of the ordinary.
This is fun.
Exactly.
A different scenery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cassandra in Milford.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. I was calling in about the weird job.
Yeah, what'd you have?
My first job out of college, I actually worked up at Mohegan Sun, and when they would have those 1,000-people promos where they give you a free giveaway, my job was to crawl under the tables beforehand and install, 30, 40 printers just so we could print a receipt for people to get their free pillow or tumbler or whatever.
That many people would show up.
Yes. Yep. And at the time, I mean, I don't even have an IT degree. My degree was in video. And so it just was such a weird job to have because they promoted it as an event job. But the job was literally just installing printers for people to get their receipts.
What did you think it was going to be when you got that job?
I thought I'd be working more in the arena or just at different events, greeting people and helping plan the events.
And instead, you're crawling under tables.
That is a weird job.
It was one of the best jobs ever, ironically enough, because if things went down, you'd get to see all the behind the scenes of, the whole entire casino and everything. But it was probably one of the most bizarre jobs for sure.
And what are you doing now?
I work in parks and recreation event planning.
Oh, I watch your show all the time. It's great. That was a joke. Thank you, Cassandra. Chris on the road.
Good morning, everyone.
Hey.
Back in the day, a long time ago, I used to be a brick cleaner. When they tear down the buildings, I used to sit there and knock the mortar off the bricks, and they would salvage the bricks and resell them.
Wow. What did that pay an hour?
You get paid per brick. So the faster you work, the more money you made. But it was like a nickel a brick or something like that. But they only took a second to knock the mortar off each one,
A nickel a brick. How many bricks could you do in an hour?
I probably averaged maybe about $20 an hour or so, and then knocking them off like that. Because
what year was that?
Like I said, it's real quick. You take a chisel, knock off the mortar, and a couple seconds each brick, you just pile them up,
That's great. I always wondered about that because I see new buildings with old brick. I'm like, how the hell did they do that?
Yeah, and a lot of people like the old bricks, the looks of them and everything.
So yes.
We salvage them, you know.
And sometimes you could see a building that was on fire. You could see the bricks are scorched.
Yeah.
Well, that means the right person wasn't cleaning them then, right?
Not doing a great job.
If they are adding to an old building already and they need to put some new bricks in it or something like that, they just reuse old bricks to make it look, you know, like it's always been there, you know?
Are people still doing that, or have they made a machine to do that now?
I am not sure. I mean, this was like 45 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. What are you doing now?
Now I'm retired. I'm a part-time driver for Napa.
Oh, great. Nice. All right, Chris. Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right.
I never realized they saved those things.
No.
I guess it makes sense, though, right?
It sounds like busy work. Hey, see that pile of bricks over there? Go.
It's that day up, one on the construction site.
It's something you do for a 12-year-old to keep him busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Just go over there and take that. I'll give you a nickel of brick.
Yeah. Go play Frank, on the highway.
Frank and Sandy Hook.
Hey, morning, guys.
Hey.
So, yeah, my family, actually my great-uncle, owned a funeral home.
Boom.
And I was... So like my first real paying job, I got paid once a month, and people would pull in for a funeral or a wake, and my uncle would have me out in the parking lot, and I would park people's cars for them.
Really?
12. So people
when you were 12?
12. I'm pretty tall, so people would kind of sometimes look at me and be like, I think this is a kid. He's going to drive my car. And I would park their car and hand them their keys on the inside of the funeral home. And it was just odd. My uncle trusted me enough to park people's cars in his funeral home.
Wow. They don't do that anymore. Now you park yourself. So did you ever see a dead body?
Sadly, I did. I was quite young, and it was like, you know, down in the downstairs area. And, Chaz, I know you'd actually be familiar with this funeral home, too. It's,
in which town?
Shelton.
Okay. And you went downstairs and did you know what you were doing, or you just happened to go downstairs looking for some car keys?
I knew what was down there, but I kind of went into the room and was like, oh, and just kind of shut the door real quick.
Okay.
I didn't get the whole gist because I was still pretty scared, but.
Was it male, female? Dressed, undressed?
It was just out on the table, and my uncle was working on him.
Oh,
whoa.
Working on him. Hmm.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it was definitely an experience.
That'll stay with you. Do you ever have dreams about that?
You know, actually, I haven't. But
you will now because I mentioned it. Sorry.
I did.
I think I might, and I didn't even see it.
I did know I wasn't going into the family business at that point.
Oh, really? That was it? You saw that? You're like, yep, nope.
Yeah,
0.2 seconds. Nope. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Yep. But my cousins and everything are. But
they're still doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Very, very lucrative.
Well, that's the thing. They never go out of business, really, right?
Did they do any fun stuff for Halloween? I got to think that's if you're in that business, your family's got to have some fun at Halloween, right?
Yeah. You either have the best sense of humor or it's just completely sterile everywhere. It's just always the same. I feel like those are the only options.
Yeah, and then years after that show on, I can't remember the name
Six
of it.
Feet but, Under.
Oh, 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
Yep. On HBO, I was like, man, that's kind of like my family. that was my weird job, first weird paying job. I had to do other things previous to that, but my uncle paid me once a month, and that was my first real paying job.
What do you do now?
I own my own electrical business.
Oh, good for you.
Nice.
Yeah. So, well, thanks, guys. I appreciate you taking the call.
Frank,
thank
you.
Have a great day.
All right, you too. Teabag.
Guys, good day.
Hey, you want to tell Kent smirking right now. You want to tell Kent Pierce how you got that name?
It's going to come out with the profession he's calling it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're related.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly. They're related. So one of my first jobs, I worked for a septic company when I was 15, 16 years old. And, you know, I used to go get coffee and stuff with these guys in the morning. And every morning I'd always get tea. And so I ended up sucking on a tea bag at the end of each drink. And these guys ended up nicknaming me Tea Bag. So it's nothing crazy.
Okay.
I was worried.
I had bad visuals.
I picturing you bobbing up and down somewhere.
Also,
it was a great job. Great people to work
with. Why were you sucking the tea bags?
Because I just wanted all the tea out of it.
Oh, wow.
Just some more tea. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like
mainlining it. You know what I mean? That's like crack. Yeah.
I haven't had enough.
Yeah. I used to squeeze the tea bag into the tea.
Yeah.
When there's only a little
really
bit left.
You don't want to use your hands when you work in the septic business, you know, to squeeze your tea bag.
Okay. Yes.
That's a pro tip right there.
Makes sense.
That's a pro tip. Yeah.
That's a day one, pro do tip. It once and never again tip.
This tea tastes funny.
This tea tastes like S.
I'm never going to that place again. Oh, wait, it was me.
Yeah, my bad. That was my bad. What's that smell? What's that smell?
Are you still doing that work?
No, but I'm able to see the guys almost every morning, which is great.
That's good.
A great group of people.
All right, T-Bag.
A lot of balls helping.
Thank you, brother.
Guys, have a great day.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, Kent, did you think you were going to hear any of this?
A funeral home, septic service? Yeah, I think these guys got me beat.
Yeah, right.
I like the brick salvager.
Yeah, that was pretty good, too.
Really cool jobs.
Something I didn't even know was a job.
Right.
That's a weird job. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in, man.
My pleasure.
You know, we're lucky to have someone like you doing the news, like a real news person out there in the morning, actually gathering news and presenting it.
That's the idea.
It's very rare now.
And teaching the next generation.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
That's cool.
Paying attention, Jimmy?
Yeah, no. Okay. It's really cool. It's cool.
Kent Pierce, News 8. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.